Good morning and welcome to We Are Just Christians. We're so glad you've tuned in today to the show, and we'll hope for the next hour or so to provide you with a lot of food for thought and some things to challenge you from the scriptures. My name is Mike Schmidt. I'm the host, along with Gary Jones, of We Are Just Christians. I'm the preacher and one of the elders, along with Gary, at the Church of Christ on Savona Boulevard. And this show is called We Are Just Christians because the aim of the show is to get people back to the scriptures, back to the Bible, to form the basis of their religious belief. Too many human creeds and other human ideas and other religious ideas out there that people are basing their life on, I think, unwisely, whatever word you want to use in that case. But we want to go back to the basics of Christianity and be just a Christian, not some kind of Christian and not something else. And so we go back to the New Testament to find out what to do about that, and we take your calls and comments. This is a live call-in show. And if you're new, I want to encourage you to get a piece of paper and a pencil, write down some of the scriptures that we give you, and write down maybe your own comments or questions. We'd be glad to hear from you. You can reach us here in WPSL at 340-1590. That's in the 772 area code, 340-1590. Maybe you live out of, maybe you're listening to this on the internet. You can write that number down on Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. Give us a call between 9 and 10. Right. We'd be glad to take your call. You can call 772-340-1590. Or you can reach us on Twitter at Just Christians and the number 1. Just Christians 1 on Twitter. And we'll post things from time to time. We'll inundate you with tweets during the week, but we'll post things from time to time. And we'd be glad to hear from you on Twitter. Even live during the show, we can follow that. We have an email address, which I'll give you in just a moment. We don't follow that during the show, of course, but we do have several email questions here pending. We're still trying to get around to talking about them. Maybe we'll get one or two today. People have written us questions over the email. But the most interesting thing for most people, Gary, is when people call in, right?
Right.
So we'd encourage you to call in today. You can reach us at 772-340-1590 until 10 o'clock this morning. And we'll be glad to hear from you, whether you agree or disagree, or maybe you want to bring up something completely different than what we're talking about. We don't mind at all. If we know the answer, we'll try to point you to some scriptures. And if we don't, we'll tell you, we'll get back to you about that, right?
Right.
That's all we can do about that. So we don't have any problem with you talking about something that's not on our agenda. We're going to have to come prepared for the show with some things to talk about, but we're not stuck on that. And we want you to call in this morning, 340-1590. Well, Gary, we've got two or three things kind of hanging left over we've been talking about from the last two or three weeks. And we're going to get to your continuing study on the book of Revelation. You're on chapter 14 now?
14.
14.
We'll
hope to get to that.
14.
All right. And in fact, I've got something here kind of goes to what we were talking about last week, which related to it. I think we had a call last week, my memory's correct, about the Antichrist and some things like that.
Right.
And I want to come to that in just a moment, and maybe that'll lead into your discussion of the book of Revelation.
Right.
If not, if we get a call on something else, of course, that'll be good too. But, I saw something in the news that I thought was a little bit chilling, as it were. At least it gave me, you and I have been talking about this, Gary, maybe privately, we probably mentioned on the air a few times, maybe in Bible classes, about this business of, what do they call it? Not free speech. I'm having a mental block here. Politically correct speech, that you have to say things a certain way. Hate speech. That's what I'm trying to say. It was in my mind and thought about something else, picked the paper up and got whoop. You ever have that happen where whatever's in your mind just kind of goes blank for a minute?
Right.
I guess somebody in the brain hit the reset button for a moment. But hate speech. People think, oh, that's a good idea because people shouldn't be hating on each other. Well, hate is an emotion. It is not an action per se.
Right.
And when you get the legislatures, politicians, and activists trying to regulate what my emotions are supposed to be, you have a whole area of grayness in liberty, in civil liberty, and in freedom of speech. And what happens now is because of hate speech, politicians feel that they feel perfectly at ease telling me how I'm supposed to think about everything. In fact, we got a letter from the IRS, from a political action committee, Americans United for the Separation of Church and State this week. Basically, it was a political diatribe threatening us that if we say anything political from the pulpit, they're going to try to get the IRS to pull our tax-exempt status. Well, so be it. If we get pulled, we get pulled. But that's how I look at it. I don't know how you look at it, Gary. But
well, if we're teaching what's in the New Testament...
They're telling me that I can't say what I want to about any political issue. Well, I say, well, then keep the government out of religious issues.
Yeah.
If they want me to stay out of political issues, they need to stay out of religious issues. And most issues I know of deal with morality in some way, at least
right.
on some level. So I'm going to talk about them, and I'm going to say this candidate says this, and this candidate says that, and here's what the Bible says. You know, that's, but so anyway, we'll go over that some other time. But what I'm getting at here, here's the city of Houston, it says, this comes from last week, is demanding that pastors turn over sermons to a board of theirs to be analyzed. Because it's been that they issued subpoenas now, which
yes.
is a legally binding, you know, threat of jail time if you don't do this, demanding that a group of pastors turn over any... I got a subpoena to be a witness in a trial recently, basically it threatened me with jail time if I don't call in, show up at a certain date, okay? It was very clear, big, bold letters from the clerk of court of the circuit court here in Fort Pierce. And that they subpoenaed pastors demanding a group of pastors turn over any sermons dealing with homosexuality, gender identity, or Anise Parker, the city's first openly lesbian mayor. And those ministers who failed to comply could be held in contempt of court, and so forth and so on. And so you've got this whole problem. Because she's openly homosexual and people are running against her, and they've been opposed to her agenda on many other issues, she's demanding that they turn over any sermons that might have to do with her or any other speech about homosexuality or anything like that. This is completely unprecedented, I think, at least in modern times, that a court would demand that preachers turn over their sermon notes to be analyzed by a politician.
Okay. It's hard for me to understand that when I was growing up some 50-something years ago, it would be hard for me to understand that a judge would even issue a subpoena over that, considering the First Amendment.
Right.
That's just beyond my imagination.
Well it says that so the subpoenas are just the latest twist in an ongoing saga over Houston's new non-discrimination ordinance. The law, among other things, would allow men to use the ladies' room and vice versa. Did you know that? That's what
law
is about.
Yeah.
And the city council approved the law in June, but opponents of the ordinance launched a petition drive and generated more than 50,000 signatures, far more than the 17,000 needed to put a referendum on the ballot. However, the city threw out the petition in August over alleged irregularities. And so then opponents of the bathroom bill filed a lawsuit, and the city's attorneys responded by issuing subpoenas against the pastors who opposed this bill. So it's a battle over whether we should have separate men's and women's restrooms, over homosexuality, and the mayor's heavy-handed approach to this, I guess. And so there's just a tremendous opposition, but I guess I know there's going to be opposition to one way or the other, but the very fact that a mayor of a city and a city council would agree to do this is what frightens me. This might go away, but it's not going to go away.
Well, it might go away for a short time.
Well, in Houston, it might go away for a while, but it's not going away because once you get the precedent that Big Brother can demand your sermon outlines and notes and then go over them and decide that you're a criminal or not, now you have a big problem as far as the Constitution and freedom is concerned. And this is the way it's going to be. You know, the gay rights activists are not going to be happy till everybody is silenced who opposes anything that they do. Okay? That's
right.
The problem. They're not going to be happy. And so if we think we can make them happy, if we just allow gay marriage, then they'll be happy and they'll go away. Not going to work. So I guess I'm alarmed by this, and I think the reason I'm alarmed, there's going to be plenty of preachers out there, plenty of quote-unquote pastors out there. Oh, I have no problem turning over my notes to the government because, you know, the old line of, well, if you're not doing anything wrong, you shouldn't mind getting stopped by the police.
Well, I
have a problem with that one, too.
One of the articles that I read, and many of the pastors that are involved in this – basically said, I don't mind her reading the sermons or listening to my sermons. Basically, I wish she would, is what they said. But the fact that they are being required to turn over all communications between themselves and their, basically the members of their church, and anything that might affect her is really got them up and going. And I think right now they're making a pretty good legal fight of it.
Well, what you're going to find then is eventually in the United States of America, Gary, what you're going to find is because of laws like this that we've allowed to be passed and continue to defend these kind of laws, because nobody will think that we're homophobic or whatever. We're going to be there are going to be certain churches that are legal and certain churches whose beliefs are illegal to have. Not their actions being illegal, but their beliefs will be illegal to hold, and therefore they will be underground churches. Unfortunately, knowing the way Satan operates, it will be those who believe strictly what the Bible says will be the ones who will be illegal, and you'll have a watered-down, generic kind of quote-unquote Christianity will be accepted.
We're going back to the first century, basically, the way the Romans were towards the church. When it first began, basically, it was an illegal religion at that time.
Right, but there always will be some quote unquote Christians and Christian pastors who will knuckle under most of the major Protestant denominations have already done this. They already have knuckled under to the pressure of hate speech and all the other stuff. Of course, I don't believe it's hate speech to say that it's immoral for gays to marry or to have sexual relations, or that it's immoral for heterosexuals who are not married to have sexual relations. I believe the Bible teaches that very clearly. And for me to say that is not hate speech. It's simply a statement of fact, okay? But that's not the problem, you see. Now, you got two or three. You can look this up. It's all over the Internet. It's all over the Houston Chronicle. If you don't want to go to one of these, what you might call a right-wing news site or something, go to the Houston Chronicle and Google the articles, and you'll see what it says about the this very issue. Now, I don't know. It seems to me that Christians better pay attention. Whether you agree with me on the immorality of homosexuality or the problem of legalizing gay marriage, you better realize that Bible Christianity is under attack by secular left-wing activists, and they're not going to stop until they bully everyone into submission on this issue. So you might as well get ready to either knuckle under or oppose it. You got your choice. There's no just keeping silent, hoping it'll put your head in the sand, hoping it's going to go away. It's not. And sorry I sound a little animated on this, Gary, but it does trouble me, the idea that, and as an American, I cannot say what I think is right from the pulpit. I don't get up in the pulpit and say just inflammatory things just to get people mad, nor do I preach overtly political sermons. I have a political viewpoint, but it's a Bible viewpoint, I believe. You can call it political if you want to, but it's not based on politics. If I wanted to be in politics, I would have been in politics. And that's the direction I was going as a young man, that's not the direction I'm in now. But I'm going to speak on these moral issues. Gary is too.
Right.
And if the government comes and if we get subpoenaed and we don't turn it over and we get arrested, then you can come visit us in jail. That's the way I look at it. Visit me in jail.
We'll be in good company.
Well, I think so, because I can read in the book of Acts where the government tried to silence them from speaking in the name of Jesus Christ, and they said, you know, we must obey God rather than men. They counted it an honor to be arrested for speaking the gospel of Christ in opposition to the civil authorities of that day.
Right. And the Apostle Paul was jailed how many times?
Over and over again.
Right.
Now, here's where else this goes. By the way, you can reach us at 772-340-1590. 772-340-1590. You know, Gary, one thing that really, maybe I'm animated about this, because I've been predicting this, not that I'm a prophet, but I've been predicting these very things happening for many, many years. You're an extremist, you're overreacting, blah, blah, blah. Just preach the gospel. No one in America can stop you from preaching the gospel. I've been getting all this stuff for years. And now, guess what?
You can't.
Here it is. It's right in front of us now. It's not only just a theory that somebody is going to do this. Now it's been done in a major U.S. city. and supported by courts in that city, by judges and courts and city councils in a major American city. It isn't a theory anymore that this is going to happen. It's reality, okay?
Well, I've been against the hate laws from the beginning, speech laws from the beginning.
I don't use hateful speech, but to make it illegal to think a certain way is not American, for one thing.
And basically, what we're looking at is we're not talking about speech that calls for the death of someone or the injury of someone or anything like that. It's just speech.
It's expressing an opinion.
It's speech that basically expresses what we find in the Bible, and that's...
Right.
That's been a book that's been respected down through the ages.
This is the reason that those speech laws were made part of the Bill of Rights, and right there connected to free speech is freedom of religion. There's locked in together at the beginning of the Bill of Rights. Okay, that's no accident, because this is what was happening at the beginning of the American Republic. That they were trying to squash out people's different religious opinions than the state would hold. And they made it very clear that we were going to tolerate that in the United States. Now we have a religious belief that homosexuality is acceptable. That's a religious belief as well as a social belief. And they're trying to make that the law of the land.
Right.
Well, here's the other thing.
Well, that's
what
most of the people came over here from England to get away from, was basically the English government was dictating what religion you could practice or what you could speak.
Right, what you could say.
And what you could say. And that's why this country was basically created, if you will. That was the basic principle for it. And, you know, Mike, I learned that in basically in history class in grade school.
Oh, I know. Now it's not taught like that at all.
No, that's
what's
taught
is that a bunch of white guys came here to suppress the American Indians and to create a capitalist utopia. That's what's taught to our children. That's not what happened. And so now we have this whole thing. Now, here's the other part of this, Gary. Another article this week that is interesting about this, because what it's telling me is something else we predicted. The New York Times demands equality for pedophiles. Did you catch this?
Yes.
The New York Times had both predicted demands
that.
We've been predicting this for a long time, because if homosexuality is simply a sexual orientation that is not a moral issue at all, then I can tell you, because I've had dealt with these people over the years as a preacher and as a counselor, that there is no difference between a homosexual and a pedophile in this regard, except some. Well, even these people are saying age is not really a factor, because there should not be, and that's the point, there should not be any laws discriminating by age. Ageism is a crime. Isn't it a crime to discriminate because of someone's age?
Right.
It is on the other end. Why not on that end? So here's what it says. America's tough anti-pedophilia. By the way, in case you don't, pedophilia is child-adult sex. It's pedo in Greek is child. Philia is love. It's child love. And the North American Man-Boy Love Association, NAMBLA, has been an activist, among other organizations, for this for years, to try to soften up these laws against adult men and women having sex with minors, what we call minors, because they say the word a minor is an arbitrary legal designation that can be moved. You can move it from 21 to 18. You can move from 18 to 15. You can move from 15 to 12 if you want to. It's an arbitrary distinction, according to them. And so, according to an op-ed published by the New York Times, this is not some podunk San Francisco hippie magazine, okay? This is the New York Times. Editor Margot Kaplan, an entrepreneurial assistant law professor at Rutgers and a former lawyer for the American Civil Liberties Union, she starts the article titled, "Pedophilia, a Disorder, Not a Crime," by writing, "Think back to your first childhood crush. Maybe it was a classmate or a friend next door. Most likely, through school and into adulthood, your affections continued to focus on others in your appropriate age group. But imagine that they did not." She says that there are people who are living with pedophilia, a sexual attraction. It's a sexual attraction disorder to prepubescence that often can constitute a mental illness. So she says this is a sexual orientation. Instead of loving people in your age group, you keep loving children. So when Michael Jackson told everybody years ago, Gary, on TV, "Well, I love children. I would never hurt children." You know what? I've heard those exact words from pedophiles that I've counseled, they would never hurt a child, even though they were what we call molesting young boys and girls. In their mind, that was not molesting, it was love. I love children, they would tell me. Well, I understood when Michael Jackson said that, I knew exactly what he meant. Because he was expressing the heart of a person who loves children. That's the whole point. Pedophilia, lover of children. Now they don't view their actions as harmful. They view it as a normal sexual attraction or desire. And so the second misconception, she goes on to say in this article, Gary, is that pedophilia is a choice. Remember we heard homosexuality is not a choice.
Right.
You're born that way.
Heard that.
Now we're hearing that pedophilia is not a choice. Recent research, she says, while often limited to sex offenders, because the stigma of pedophilia suggests that the disorder may have neurological origins, it's built into the brain. Pedophilia could result from a failure in the brain to identify which environmental stimuli should provoke a sexual response, and so basically that she's trying to remove the stigma of this. And she says, Kaplan is currently trying to make a legal career in the regulation of expanding sexual diversity. So all this sexual diversity we hear about and all these diversity laws and anti-discrimination laws, hate speech laws, sexual diversity laws is now going to include, if these people have their way, and they will, it's going to include pedophilia. And here's how, another way that I kind of know where we're going, Gary, and you do too, from your study of history, is that at the time of Christ, in the Roman Empire, among the Greeks and Romans, pedophilia was what we call pedophilia today, was an ordinary sexual orientation among those people. It was just normal. In the book Flesh and Spirit by William Barclay, he's writing about the words that Paul uses in Galatians chapter 5, verse 19, on the works of the flesh, and he discusses the climate in the Roman Empire with regard to sexual sins, and he basically says that of all of the Caesars, only one of the Caesars of Rome had sexual tastes that would be considered ordinarily moral today. Augustus was apparently the only one. All the rest of them were homosexual or lovers of little boys. Many of the Greek love songs, we talk about these Greek poets writing these great love songs, they were written to young boys and teenage boys by these older men. That's what this was about. That's what the Roman Empire was like. That's what the Greeks were about. And, of course, we get the word lesbos, lesbian, from the island of Lesbos off the coast of Greece because of the large number of female homosexuals there. Now, we could discuss how one becomes a homosexual or what that's about another show, but I'm just trying to point out to you that this is related. These hate speech laws, closing down people's opposition to them, the anti-discrimination laws, and now we predicted this a few years ago, now it's coming to pass, that here are major U.S. educational and news organizations and major organizations like Rutgers and Harvard that are coming out in favor of legalizing and destigmatizing pedophilia. Parents, you need to be aware of this. You're going to be tempted to call someone like me just a crazy right-wing preacher on the radio or whatever other name you want to apply to me. Hopefully you won't say the same thing about Gary, although he's probably worse. Right, Gary? I don't know.
Well, actually,
I'm more vocal, but you may be tempted to cast the aspersion back on us, but I want you to understand that this has been coming for a long time, and it you better wake up as to what's going on with these people and your children, because they're going to help destroy them.
And pay attention to the person you vote for, what they actually believe or practice or push.
Yes.
That's something Christians need to start doing.
And it's serious. Are we advocating that, that pedophiles be sent off to an island or killed or something? Of course not. I just got finished telling you, if you're paying attention, that I spend some time in my work as a minister trying to help people who are pedophiles, trying to get them to repent, change their behavior, trying to counsel them, trying to help them to recover from often the abuse that they suffered as a child. They often are pedophiles because of of wrong done to them. So I'm not unsympathetic to the problem that they have. I am unsympathetic to the idea that we should normalize this and make it a legally protected class of people so that we cannot... If you say that it's simply a mental disorder or something that is built into a person, you're not going to be able to have laws saying that Boy Scout leaders can't be pedophiles. You're not going to be able to have a law saying these people can't work in schools because it's perfectly normal to be this way. This is what's coming. It's the goal of much of the homosexual activists. Many of the homosexual and gay rights activists have had this goal in mind all along, Gary, in their activism, because they also themselves are attracted to young boys. Why?
Well, I've been kind of quiet because, Mike,
I've been talking too much.
Basically, what I've been trying to look up, there is a federal government list of mental disorders. And what I remember from the mid-70s was homosexualism was on that list until about 1975.
Right. It was put out by the American Psychological Association, right. APA, and then the government uses that as kind of a reference for their laws.
But that was removed, and that's when a lot of this got really started.
A big push to remove it.
Right.
And discriminatory you were to have it on a list of mental disorders.
And I was trying to make a quick check, but I'm going to have to spend more time to see if pedophilia was still on that list.
That's being removed from that list. It's being reclassified on that list.
Yeah.
Because they say it is a sexual orientation. The truth is it may be a sexual orientation. I don't know. I know that the people that I've dealt with, these are grown men. They don't have any desire to have sexual relations with a grown woman. They often don't have any sexual desire to have relations with a boy. They only are attracted to young girls under the age of XYZ, depending on their personal background. Their taste range from like 13 down to 5, you know, or younger, depending on the person. But that's the only kind of person that caused them to have sexual desire. Now, then there are others whose sexual desire is toward young males, they're male themselves, and they have desire for young males of the same ages.
And that was quite common in ancient Greece.
Yes, and so is the young girl. Why is it that we're so, I hate to say this. Should I say it? Well, I'll go ahead and say it. The fashion designers and the fashion industry in our country and all that is dominated by homosexuals. I don't think that's a big secret. I don't think that's inflammatory to say. I think that's just a fact. Okay? And it's often proudly touted when you talk to homosexuals about what contribution they make to society. They'll tell you that the fashion industry is dominated by these people. Why is it that all the women on these ads are more and more and more looking like young boys? Why is it that they have no curves, no womanly features? Why do they look kind of young, short hairstyles? It's because the people that are designing the clothes and picking the models are themselves attracted to other men and young men. That's not a big secret. If you read the right sources from them on their vantage point, you see that this is the case. So people are just not aware of this. We're so sheltered in our thinking about what's going on.
I have a question for you, Mike.
All right.
If basically we're going to normalize homosexuality as a sexual orientation, and then we go ahead and normalize pedophilia as a sexual orientation, what keeps rape from being a sexual orientation?
Well, the only thing you can say there is consent. But see, here's the problem with that. Once you lower the age limits, consent becomes fuzzy.
Yes.
The only thing now people, young people can't consent to something, but you go talk to a pedophile and you go talk to the people that are pushing this agenda, and they will argue with you about what constitutes consent. They understand this is the problem, and so that's what you're getting at, isn't
right,
it, Gary?
Exactly.
They are going to undermine what we think of as consent. And of course, in ancient Rome and Greece, the classical period everybody wants to go back to, rape, forcible sexuality, all those things were quite common. And, of course, what is it that you think turns a young woman's heart to only want to be around other women? Very often it is sexual abuse, rape, forcible sexual relations. Those things, by older men, they turn the woman's heart away from men. And so most homosexual women have that problem. I sympathize with them because those things are sins. They are wrong. They ought to be prosecuted, not excused. Not defined. So unless you think I'm unsympathetic toward them, I am sympathetic. But you're not going to fix the problem by allowing more and more of these of this to go on. You're only going to fix it by stopping the wrong and labeling it as wrong and keeping it, as it were, with a stigma so people don't want to do it.
Right.
Are there going to be people that don't care about the stigma and do it anyway? Of course.
Yes.
They're always, well, I don't care what, I don't care how far you lower the bar, that's always the way it's going to be. But and we need to develop some way to help these people not to learn to live with their pedophilia, but to learn to overcome their pedophilia and control it. So now the problem is we have government programs trying to help people learn to adjust to and live with pedophilia and so forth. So anyway, I'm ranting and raving this morning. It's very upsetting because of the harm it's done. It's just like pornography. I have an article in the Bulletin this morning, Gary, about pornography. One of the big problems of pornography, oh, shouldn't people be allowed to watch what they want to in their own privacy? Okay, look, as far as civil liberties, I suppose that's okay. But the truth is, for all you folks out there, male or female, that ingest pornography this morning, if you're in process, if you are involved in that, you are in, and you, yet these same people will come out and they're against human trafficking. They're against pedophilia. They're against rape. Who do you think is, where do you think they're getting the people to go into these films? Who are they? They're often victims of child molestation. They're often victims of sexual abuse. Not only that, but then when they get involved in the human trafficking and in the pornography industry, they become more victimized. So every time you watch pornography, you are encouraging the making of more pornography, which involves the exploitation of young women and young boys, and sometimes older women and boys through the same means. You are encouraging the exploitation and the brutalization of someone's mother, someone's sister, someone's daughter. You're encouraging that by your viewing of pornography. And as long as we keep doing it, it's going to keep being made.
As long as it is profitable, it will keep going.
So you can criticize fuddy-duddy old preachers like me if you want to, but the fact is, you're encouraging it along the way when you engage in these heterosexual sins as well as the homosexual sins. All right, Gary, I guess I better stop ranting and raving.
Yeah,
I did take my blood pressure medicine this morning.
We're about halfway.
Halfway through. Let me give you the numbers. Maybe somebody's got to either want to add, or if you want to call and really you're upset with me, or Gary, that's fine. Give us a call. 772-340-1590. 772-340-1590. You can reach us on Twitter at Just Christians and the number 1, Just Christians 1. Or you can reach us by email. Maybe you don't want to talk. You want to write out an email to us. We'll deal with that on the air. JustChristians@att.net. JustChristians@att.net. You see why I told you to get a piece of paper and a pencil?
Right.
Yeah. And then our website is wearejustchristians.com. Wearejustchristians.com. And you can listen to this show, sermons, other Bible study materials there at wearejustchristians.com. So drop us an email, justchristians@att.net. Look on the website, We Are Just Christians, or drop us a line at Twitter, Just Christians 1, or right now give us a call, 772-340-1590. You know, Gary, the Bible says in Romans chapter 1, verses 26 through 31, one of the sins that it lists there, it lists uncleanness and lasciviousness, and as well as very clearly picturing men and women engaged in homosexual activity. And one of the other things that it has there is that they have no natural affection. That's how the King James, some of the older translations translate that word. No natural affection. The word in Greek is astorge. Storge is the word for family love. Astorge in Greek means unfamily love or no family love. And so what it would be is this. The natural human inclination of an adult male is to protect young boys and girls from any harm or any danger and to love them and to build them up and encourage them. The natural inclination of normal humans down through history has been especially to protect their own children, their own wives, mothers, and sons, to protect them and to let them grow up and be healthy. when he said that the Romans had no, and Greeks had no natural affection, would have been destroyed in their societies by pagan immorality, was that natural family love. And so therefore they would take their children in Rome, they would perform quote unquote a Caesarean section named after Caesar and the people of Caesar's household who didn't want their bodies disfigured by pregnancy and childbirth, and they would cut those babies out of the womb or forcibly bring them out with forceps to get the babies out, and they would put them on the street corners, and they'd pick, wagons would come along and pick up the carcasses of all these babies every day in Rome and take them away. There's a whole industry developed around that. That was part of this no family love. When you can kill your own children, you're capable of a lot of other things. And then they didn't have the natural barrier to having sexual relations with their own offspring or other children. That was removed by their lust, their immorality, their unbridled passion. This was condemned, and this is what we see today. More and more every day since the 60s, whatever barrier there is to human behavior is slowly being dismantled. So now there is no barrier that prevents people from acting however they want with whatever lust or passion they might muster against whoever it may be, man, woman, or child. They don't care. And this is a very dangerous and regrettable situation.
Well, one of the reasons why I asked the question later on about rape, because all of these things are leading to a decay in morality within our society that encourages all of the things that we've stood against for so many years, and the things that we've stood against in this country, which has made this country great and make it safe, is basically we're going to be seeing more rape, more murder, more theft. Once you start this cycle of the decay of...
Let's say whatever passion you can muster, that's what you do.
If that's a normal thing, if all of this stuff is normalized so that it's okay, then we're going to have a society that's really going to be terrible to live in.
If the only barrier to human behavior is whether the New York Times and Harvard liberals oppose something, we're in trouble.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Because whatever it be next week, they won't be opposing it. Well, Gary, we probably need to switch subjects. We got three things that we need to get to, probably not this week, but soon. Three emails. One is on what day was Jesus Christ crucified? Thursday, Friday, whenever. Then we've got an email about whether Judas was really a sinner, and so forth. And we have an email about instrumental music, about whether that's right or wrong. But right now,
sounds like
we got a caller on the line. Yes, sir. Go ahead. Is this Ken?
Yeah, this is Ken. I wasn't going to call today, but I had to put my sense in on the subject. Let me just say, welcome to the government's religion.
Welcome to the government's religion, yes.
Yeah.
That's where we're headed to. I have to tell you something. This cannot be good for Jews, Christians, Muslims, whoever, if they aren't going to go along with the general politically correct line of thinking.
Yeah. You know, back when the Supreme Court, by the way, the Supreme Court, the last ruling on this was the states could decide for themselves whether they wanted to allow gay marriage or not. I find it interesting now that you have local federal judges trying to overturn that ruling. And now the latest thing is the Supreme Court will not hear the appeal.
They won't hear an appeal as to whether... they have a right to change, go ahead. Explain it better than what I'm not understanding what you're saying exactly.
Okay.
Sorry.
The Supreme Court, when they ruled on gay marriage recently, you know, what was it, November?
Yes.
Something like that. What they said was that the states had a right to ban gay marriage.
Right. Okay.
And it was up to the states. They weren't going to decide it themselves, nationally. And so now you have these judges who are saying bans are unconstitutional, which is contradictory to what the Supreme Court ruled.
Right. Well, that's what it was designed to do in the first place.
And appeal to those cases. So they're basically letting these lower court judges overturn their own ruling.
Right.
Well, basically, for the most part, Ken, none of these laws have been approved by the voters, per se. These laws have been put aside or enacted via the judicial system through these judges that basically have no moral basis. When you start looking at, you know, Mike, I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but if you go back far enough in history, I read an article that at one time England, about 300, 400 years ago, basically made a law that says if you were not a Christian, you couldn't serve in their government. Now, that might have been a discriminatory law, but their rationale was if you were an atheist, you could lie, you could do anything. You didn't have a moral code to follow. And their logic was someone who ruled in government needed a moral code to follow.
Yeah.
And that was what they put in place.
Because that produced a lot of nominal Christians government.
Produced a lot of nominal Christians, but at least when the body of the electorate or the body of the people had that moral code, they could not step that far outside of it without being disapproved or pretty soon being out. And while that's simply disappearing in this country today, we had that for about the first 175 years, something mm-hmm. like that. But now, as we've gone on, it's disappearing. There's the moral code of the people that are in our government now. You know, you can say anything that you need to say. It doesn't matter whether it's a lie or whether it's truth or what. As long as it gets you elected and gets you in a position of power, that's what most of them are going to say.
Now, they're all brought in check by the politically correct bureaucracies and other institutions. But you pretty much do what's necessary to be elected. And I guess there's always been a majority of politicians that way. And by the way, this cuts across party lines. There are many quote-unquote conservatives that I don't have any respect for because I don't see that moral compass in them either at all. And they're just going to use the government power to do what they want to do rather than what's right. But, Ken, I think you're right. I think what's happened is when the government itself will not respect its own laws, then what are we left with, you know?
We're left with lawlessness, eventually, when
executive powers can just make new laws and change the ones that have been passed by legislatures to do what they want. I mean, this is a dangerous situation. And my interest in these things is involved in the morality of these things as it affects my grandchildren and children and other people. But it also, this general feeling of it becomes a fear for Christians who believe in the Bible. They're the ones that eventually will bear the brunt of this. I hate to be a prophet again, but I'm telling you, it isn't going to happen to the major mainline denominations because they're going to knuckle under. You're already seeing this in the Methodists, Episcopalians, and so forth. They're already knuckling under to all these politically correct deep. In fact, sometimes they're leading the way in society against the Bible on these matters. It's going to be people who take the Bible seriously that are going to face the consequences of this.
Yes.
And then they can say, well, see, those rogue religions over there, those unauthorized religions, why they teach, they're hateful people and so forth. So you're going to have your approved, state-approved religions, the major mainline Protestants and some Catholics, and you're going to have everybody else then who will not go along with it.
Right.
And you'll either knuckle under or you'll be persecuted. And this is the way it's always gone. America's not unique in this. This is the way it's always gone under, when you get a centralized governmental power with great authority, this is the way that it's always gone, from the Roman Empire on down. And I don't see why it should be any different with America, even though I love America. It's not going to be any different here than anyplace else. Ken, what else you got to say?
The point I was trying to make is, the Constitution forbids the government of establishing a religion. And also the Florida Constitution does the same thing. State is not allowed to establish its own religion. And I think once they say you have to have gay marriage, you're establishing your own religion. Now you're telling the churches what they have to.
Well, it's certainly a step in that direction. And now when they're subpoenaing sermons to critique, where governmental bodies get to critique the sermons and prosecute you based on what you say in a sermon, you certainly are on a long way toward establishing a state-approved religion.
Yeah.
And if we think it's just going to stop in Houston, I think we're whistling past the graveyard, as they say. Is that too old an expression for people? Whistling past the graveyard.
Yeah,
anyway.
That there's one flaw that I see here, Ken. You're assuming that we'll follow the Constitution. My observation today is that's being put aside. And no matter what the Constitution says, the government's going to do it. We're doing away with it now. The president has exercised powers that are clearly unconstitutional, and Congress has sat by and watched.
Right. Well, I was taught when I was in school, Gary, in a big liberal high school in Cincinnati, that the Constitution was a living document. I heard that about 100 times, and I didn't know what to think about. I was a kid, you know, but then I got away from there and realized what I was hearing. And my problem with that is, not only is that legally a farce, that you can change the Constitution depending on society around you, but it's when it's brought over into the religious world and that the Bible is a living document, now we've really got a problem. And that's what's going on in American religion in my lifetime. It's not only is the Constitution a living document that can be altered at will depending on the whim of the people, but the Bible is a living document that can be altered at will and set aside when our desires change. Those are not consistent. The Constitution, when you read it itself, does not present itself as a living document. It presents itself as one that has a procedure for changing, which is complex and difficult because it was not intended to be changed easily. So the document itself does not say that it's a living document. And I know the Bible does not present itself as a living document. It pronounces curses upon those who add to or take away from it in the last book of the Bible, the book of Revelation, much many other places. And so that's why I don't have any shame in saying the Bible is not a living document. It's meant to be taken seriously by people of whatever century you live in. And we try to do that on this show. That's what the purpose of this show is. So now, if you want to say the Bible is a living document, you need to admit it for what you're saying, that you can do what you want. In the end, humans will do what they want, and they try to use the Bible as cover. But I resent that. I resent people using the Bible as cover for ideas that are not found in the Scriptures. And so, resent's probably too strong a word. I'm opposed to it, and will try to oppose those who take liberty with the Scriptures. And Gary's the same way. What do you think about that, Ken? Is that what you're getting at?
I agree with that.
Yeah, I thought you did. Just in talk.
I'm going to hang out and let's see if someone else calls.
Well, there's some interesting wording in the First Amendment. Basically, I looked it up. It says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Now, what's...
Prohibiting the free exercise thereof is
thereof.
A big...
That's a big phrase.
Right.
Or abridging the freedom of speech... Abridging the freedom of speech. See, hate speech.
Freedom of religion is ahead of the freedom of speech in the Constitution.
Right. It's ahead of the freedom of speech in the Constitution, but basically, when applied to a religion, basically hate speech is unconstitutional in many cases if you're going to make that a restriction.
Classifying certain things as hate speech is unconstitutional.
Right.
Yes, I think that's the case.
But I'd probably be hard pressed to find a current sitting judge, that would agree with that position.
Well, that's the trouble. Once you get a precedent somewhere for something, all the judges, their job is now easy. They just go along with the precedent. They aren't forced to think for themselves and go backwards. But in any event, I'm concerned about how these legalities. I'm not out protesting on the streets particularly, but I'm concerned about how these legalities will eventually affect the free exercise of my religion and my grandchildren's religion in this country. And if we can stop persecution from beginning, I think that's better. Some may say, well, look at all the good effects persecution has, and I understand that. But I don't think we need to be blind to the idea that persecution also destroys the faith of many people. And it has terrible effects. And it just simply isn't a good and right thing to let happen. So if we can avoid it, let's avoid it or put it off as long as possible. And unfortunately, it won't be the committed Christians who escape persecution. It'll be the committed Christians who face the persecution. Let's put it that way. Thank you for calling, Ken. You got anything else?
No, I'm going to hang up before the government pulls the plug on you.
Yeah, I won't give them your last name. I forgot it anyway, but I won't give them your last name, Ken. me and Gary's already out there, so we can't help ourselves. We can't help it now. You know, it's a dangerous thing to give Gary internet access here with a computer. He looks up all kind of stuff, right? Well, Gary, we've been putting all... Let me give the phone numbers again, then we're going to get to Revelation.
Well,
we've got about
eight
minutes left.
Quick.
Can you make? Yeah. Can you do a quick lesson?
We can do part of it.
All right. 772-340-1590. 772-340-1590. Or justchristians@att.net, an email. Go ahead, Gary. We're going to talk about a little bit about the book of Revelation this morning.
Well, we're going to have to make it quick.
All right.
Basically, what we had done before, Mike, is I had gotten started in Revelation chapter 14. But since we haven't talked about it in a couple of weeks, I want to go back and try to give a little bit of a summary of what we've seen. We've seen scenes in heaven. We've seen basically the four horsemen of the apocalypse going out and making war. We've seen that in interpretation of symbols that leads us to believe that that war is a physical one and was aimed at the Jewish nation at that time, probably putting down the Jewish revolt that started early in about 67 A.D.
Okay.
And so what we're going through now is we're going through these groups of seven, and we're in the second group of seven, and we've just finished up the seventh trumpet. And I pointed out that when the seventh trumpet sounded in Revelation 10:7, that was going to mark the end of something. That was going to mark basically the end of the mystery of God, and it was going to make some fulfillment of prophecies that he talked about. So then we're introduced to several other, basically, entities within this. We see the land beast and the sea beast and some of those things that we'll see later on. But in Revelation 14, and beginning around verse 8, there is an identity brought up. And he says, another angel followed, saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she has made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Now, I'm just going to plant a seed today, and I want you to think about this. One of the keys to understanding Revelation in understanding basically the symbols and the way they're used is to identify Babylon, is to identify the great harlot that we'll see a little bit later on about chapter 16. So these are two things that we need to identify who they are. We've already seen a reference to a great city that was clearly Jerusalem. When we talked about, basically, that was that great city where our Lord was crucified. That was back up a little bit further on that we saw. We saw the two servants who did miracles, and we saw them killed, and we saw them risen, and we saw them go back to heaven. And basically, that was in the streets of that great city. Now we're going to talk about Babylon has fallen, that great city. And we need to decide who or where or what we identify Babylon with. And I'm just going to start with this because I want to talk about who Babylon is and who the harlot is in that respect. Because I think it's important to our understanding. And so I'm going to start with a kind of an obscure passage, Mike. I'm going to turn over to 1 Peter 5 in verses 13 and 14. And Peter is writing to the saints in another church, and he says, she who is in Babylon, elect together with you, greets you, and so does Mark my son, greet one another with a kiss of love. The context of that passage is Peter seems to be referring to a church as she who is in Babylon, because he'd mentioned that he was an elder there and so on, that we go on, but he didn't identify that city other than Babylon. You know, Mike, a lot of the more recent scholars identify Babylon as Rome. And they do that for a couple of reasons. And we'll go into those a little bit later on. I probably won't get to them today because we've only got about 5 minutes left. But I want to plant a seed in your mind to think about when Peter wrote, "She who is in Babylon, elect together with you," the church there in Babylon, where do you think he was writing from? And everybody says Rome. But then I got to looking for historical evidence about Rome. And you know, Mike, there is absolutely no historical evidence that Peter was in Rome.
We don't have any record of that.
We don't
have
any. Except
much later after the fact.
Yeah, much later after the fact. It's almost a tradition. It's not something that is historically verifiable. But if you go back to the Bible, where's Peter associated with? There is nothing in the Bible, I'll tell you, about Peter being in Rome. There is something in the Bible about Paul being in Rome, but there is absolutely nothing in the Bible about Peter being in Rome. So when I went back and took a look at it in Acts chapter 1, verse 12 and 13, basically we see all of the apostles returning to Rome from the mount where Jesus ascended. In Acts chapter 11, verses 1 through 3, he says, "Now the apostles and brethren who were in Judea, heard that the Gentiles had received the word of God, and when Peter came up to Jerusalem, those of circumcision contended with him, saying," and he went on. So he spent some fair amount of time in Jerusalem. In Acts chapter 15, he says, "Therefore, when Paul and Barnabas had no small dissension and dispute with him, they determined that Paul and Barnabas and certain others of them should go up to Jerusalem to the apostles and elders about this question." Basically in Acts chapter 15, 6 and 7. "Now the apostles and the elders came together in this matter, and when they had been much dispute, Peter rose up and said to them." So Peter's among that group right there in the context of Acts chapter 15. We know that the saints were basically dispersed after a persecution of Stephen. But if you look that up, what you'll find is when that verse is described, what you find is basically who was dispersed. The saints left, or many of the disciples left, but the apostles stayed in Jerusalem. The only biblical record we have of what Peter is associated with, and there's several other passages that do that, basically Peter is associated with the church in Jerusalem in the Bible more than anything else. Now, I know he was down near the... Now, see, when he was called to go see the Roman... Now, I'm having one of those mind locks, Mac. I'm like, who did he go to see? The first Gentile he talked to.
Cornelius,
right.
At Joppa.
One of the... Right. At Joppa. That's the only record we have of Peter basically going outside of that area only to Antioch to see Paul at one time. So he traveled to Antioch, he traveled to Joppa, but when people come to see him, he's in Jerusalem. When you take a look at who is going to see Peter and who is going to consult with the apostles, they find them in Jerusalem. And this would be interesting to me because this goes against that idea of Babylon being Rome. And I've got some other things, but we're virtually out of time.
We've
only got about a minute.
That's a big subject. So maybe we'll get to that first thing next week.
Yeah, we'll try to
get to
that.
I've been putting you off a lot. We've been talking about all this other stuff.
I've got a considerable body of information that leads me to believe that.
Okay.
It's not just one thing. You can't just point to one thing and say, definitely this is it. But there's just a whole body of information
changes a lot of things about the book.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
All right. Well, we're going to conclude today. We're so glad that you've been listening to We Are Just Christians. Hope you'll make it a habit every Sunday morning at 9 o'clock to listen in. We'd like to invite you to come and visit us at the Church of Christ on Savona Boulevard, 2196 Southwest Savona Boulevard. That's the southwest corner of California and Savona. We're right behind the little shopping center on the west side. Come and visit us. You'll find a family-friendly church, one that believes in the Bible, one that will not embarrass you. We don't ask for your money. Come and listen and learn, and then we can talk if you'd like. We'd like to invite you to come at 10 o'clock this morning for Bible study, 11 o'clock for worship. Thank you for listening today. Hope you'll tune in next week.
God bless you. overflows, so fill my cup. Let it overflow, so fill my cup. Let it overflow.